The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribes, Sir Laurence Olivier in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. Today our play is comedy, but a comedy with a difference, for it is written with the cynical hothouse artificiality of Oscar Wilde. Many of you may already be familiar with the famous short story upon which our play is based, but in any case, may I suggest that the importance of being earnest is a consideration not required by the audience. The place is Edwardian England, and I myself shall play the title role in Oscar Wilde's Lord Arthur Savile's Crime. It was Lady Windermere's last reception before Easter, and Bentinck House was even more crowded than usual. The guests included 6 cabinet ministers, a prima donna, a perfect bevy of bishops, and it was said that at one time the supper room was absolutely crammed with geniuses. Also among the guests was the Duchess of Paisley. Debrett credits her with 3 husbands, but as she never changed her lover, the world had long ago ceased to talk scandal about her. During the latter part of the evening, I found myself in the picture gallery with my hostess and the Duchess. Lady Windermere was telling us of her latest protégé. Oh,
dear Gladys, you are always so original.
But my dear Duchess, I can't live without my father. He comes to see my head twice a week and is most interesting about it. I must certainly introduce him to you.
Oh, you don't mean to say he's here.
Of course he is here. I wouldn't dream of giving a party without him. He tells me I have a pure psychic hand, and if my thumb had been just the least bit shorter, I should have been a confirmed pessimist and gone into a convent.
Oh, I see. He tells fortunes, I suppose.
My dear Duchess, surely Providence can resist temptation by this time. Now, if someone doesn't go and fetch Mr. Podgers at once, I shall go myself.
Let me go, Lady Windermere.
Oh, thank you so much, Lord Arthur. But I'm afraid you wouldn't recognize him. Oh, there he is. Mr. Podgers. Mr. Podgers. I want you to tell the Duchess of Paisley's hand. Duchess, you must take your glove off.
Oh, dear Gladys, I really don't think it is quite right.
Nothing interesting ever is. But I must introduce you. Duchess, this is my pet farmer. And this is Lord Arthur Savile, Mr. Podgers.
How do you do?
Now, Mr. Podgers, if you tell the Duchess she has a larger mountain of the moon than I have, I'll never believe in you again.
I'm sure, Gladys, there's nothing of the kind in my hand.
Oh, your grace is quite right. The mountain of the moon is not developed. Now, let me see. Yes, you live to a great age, Duchess, and extremely happy. Ambition, very moderate. Line of intellect, not exaggerated. Line of...
Now, do be indiscreet, Mr. Podgers.
Nothing would give me greater pleasure. If the Duchess ever had been, but I'm sorry to say that I see a great deal of permanence of affection combined with a strong sense of duty.
Thank you, Mr. Podgers.
You have told the Duchess's character admirably, and now you must tell Lord Arthur Savile.
Oh, yes.
Be sure to tell him something nice, because he's one of my special favorites. Gather round, everyone. Mr. Podgers is going to tell Lord Arthur's hand. Come, Arthur. Show Mr. Podgers your hand. But I warn you, if we find out that you have a bad temper, a tendency to gout, or a wife living in Bayswater, I shall tell your dear little Sybil about it.
I am not afraid. Sybil knows me as well as I know her. There you are, Mr. Podgers.
Well, why doesn't he say something?
He looks so strange.
What is it? What do you see?
I'm waiting, Mr. Podgers.
We're all waiting.
It's the hand of a very charming young man.
Of course it is. But will he be a charming husband? That's what I want to know.
Within the next few months, Lord Arthur will go on a voyage.
Oh, yes, his honeymoon, of course.
And lose a relative.
Oh, dear. Not his sister, I hope.
Oh, no, certainly not his sister. A distant relative, merely.
Well, I'm dreadfully disappointed. I've absolutely nothing to tell Sybil tomorrow. Come along, everyone. Let's go to supper. They're sure to have eaten up everything, but we may find some hot soup. Francis used to make excellent soup, but he's so agitated about politics at present that I never feel quite certain about him. Duchess,
The Duchess has left one of her gloves here, Lord Arthur. Ah, I see it on the sofa. Good evening.
Mr. Podgers.
Yes.
I must insist on your giving me a straightforward answer to a question I am going to put to you.
Another time, Lord Arthur, if you don't mind, I'm afraid I must go. The Duchess will be quite angry.
You shall not go. The Duchess is in no hurry. Tell me what you saw in my hand. Tell me the truth. I must know it. I'm not a child.
What makes you think I saw anything in your hand more than I told you?
I know you did. And I insist on your telling me what it was. I will pay you. I will give you a check for £100.
Guineas?
Certainly. I will send you a check tomorrow. Come, man, be quick.
You'd better sit down, Lord Arthur.
Be quick, sir. I'm quite ready.
What I saw in your hand, Lord Arthur, was murder.
Murder. In my hand was written that I, Lord Arthur Saville, was destined to commit a murder. At first, I couldn't believe it. It was ridiculous. It couldn't be true. And yet, dare I ignore it? I was overcome with horror and rushed away from Bentinck House. All night long, I grappled with the problem. And as the first faint blue of dawn appeared in the sky, I had reached a decision. My first concern was Sybil. To marry her with the possibility of murder in my future would be unthinkable. What happiness could there be for us when at any moment I might actually be called upon to carry out Podger's awful prophecy? After all, he was a man of considerable reputation. No, I would not risk it. I must assume that the man had seen the truth. Therefore, my wedding had to be postponed until after I had committed my murder. Then I could marry Sybil with a clear conscience. My mind made up. I didn't waste a moment. First of all, who was to be the victim? I went over the list of my friends and relatives. After the most careful consideration, I decided in favor of Lady Clementina Beecham, a dear old lady who lived in Curzon Street and was a second cousin on my mother's side. She had always been extremely fond of me, and she had often told me that she would do anything in the world to ensure my happiness. Yes, there could be no better choice. As anything like personal violence is extremely distasteful to me, I felt that poison was the best means to adopt. Besides, I was anxious to murder her in such a way as not to attract public attention. Poison is safe, sure, and quiet, and does away with any necessity for painful scenes, to which, like most Englishmen, I have a rooted objection. By great good fortune, I remembered from my chemistry classes at Oxford exactly the poison to fit my requirements. I set forth at once in my hansom for Pestle and Humbies, the great chemists in St. James's Street. Just stop the next corner, Albert. Pestle and Humbies.
Yes, my lord.
Hello, Mr.
Humbies.
I shan't be long.
Very good, my lord.
Good afternoon, Lord Arthur. A lovely day, isn't it?
Good afternoon, Mr. Pestle.
May I help your lordship?
Yes, you may, sir. I would like a small capsule of aconitine.
One needs a medical certificate to purchase aconitine. Oh. It's a very dangerous poison, you know. Excuse me, my lord, but may I trouble you to show me a certificate?
Well, as a matter of fact, I haven't one.
Dear me, how very awkward. Well, I'm afraid...
You see, Mr. Pestle, it's for a large Norwegian mastiff that I'm obliged to get rid of. It shows signs of incipient rabies and has already bitten the coachman twice in the calf.
Oh, in that case, I suppose it might be arranged. But you understand it's highly irregular.
I give you my word, I shan't mention it to a soul. And I would consider it a favor if you could oblige me.
Under these circumstances, certainly, my lord. Just a moment. Here we are.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Arthur. It's a pleasure to be of service to you. Good afternoon, sir. No. Good afternoon.
Lady Clementina's in Curzon Street, Albert.
Very good, my lord.
Well, my dear boy, to what do I owe the honor of this visit? You haven't been to see me in such a long time.
My dear Lady Clem, I never have a moment to myself.
I suppose you mean that you'll go about all day long with Miss Sybil Merton, buying chiffons and talking nonsense. I cannot understand why people make such a fuss about being married. In my day, we never dreamed of billing and cooing in public or in private, for that matter.
I assure you, I have not seen Sybil for 24 hours, Lady Clem. As far as I can make out, she belongs entirely to her milliner.
Well, of course, that is the only reason you come to see such an ugly old woman as myself.
If
it were not for dear Lady Jansen, who sends me all the worst French novels she can find, I don't think I can get through the day. Doctors are no use at all, except to get seeds out of one. They can't even cure my heartburn.
Ah, I have brought you a cure for that, Lady Clem.
Ah.
It is a wonderful thing invented by an American.
I don't think I like American inventions, Arthur. Mm-hmm. I'm quite sure I don't. I read some American novels, and they are quite nonsensical.
Oh, but there is no nonsense about this, Lady Clem. I assure you it is a perfect cure. You must promise me to try it. Here, in this little box.
Oh, the little box is charming, Arthur.
Well, I hoped it would please you. I stopped over on the way and bought it specially.
Oh, it was very sweet of you. And is this the wonderful medicine?
Yes, it
looks like a bonbon. I shall take it at once.
Good heavens, Lady Clem, you mustn't do anything of the kind. It is a homeopathic medicine.
Oh.
And if you take it without having heartburn, it might do you no end of harm. Wait until you have an attack. Then take it. You will be astonished at the result.
Oh, I should like to take it now. I'm sure it's delicious. However, I'll keep it till my next attack.
And when will that be? Will it be soon?
Oh, I hope not for a week. I had a very bad time yesterday morning, but one never knows.
But you're sure to have one before the end of the month, Lady Clem.
Oh, I'm afraid so. But how sympathetic you are today, Arthur. Really, Sybil has done you a great deal of good. And now you must run away, for I'm dining with some very dull people who won't talk scandal. And I know that if I don't get my sleep now, I shall never be able to keep awake during dinner. Goodbye, Arthur. Give my love to Sybil.
Yes,
and thank
indeed.
You so much for the American medicine.
You won't forget to take it, will you, Lady Clem?
Of course I won't, you silly boy.
No.
I think it is most kind of you to think of me.
Uh-huh.
And I shall write and tell you if I want any more.
Goodbye, then. And I will give Sybil your love. I'm off to see her now.
In a moment we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
You'll enjoy the parade of fine listening entertainment tomorrow on NBC. A host of noted operatic artists follow the expert baton of famed maestro Arturo Toscanini as the NBC Symphony offers the final acts of Verdi's opera, Un Ballo in Maschera. Jan Pierce and Hervanelli are among the fine stars appearing in Verdi's melodrama when Toscanini offers tomorrow's brilliant concert from Carnegie Hall. Later, enjoy exciting adventure drama with James Stewart as fast-shooting Britt Ponsett in Six Shooter. Jimmy befriends a killer's widow against a violent lynching mob in his effort to restore law and order in the West. And then, Roger Kennedy is your host on NBC's exciting and informative new series, Collector's Item, when a host of famed personalities join to keep you posted on what's new in the world of arts and sciences. Then for more comedy adventure with the delightful Marriotts, join that brilliant team Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy as they star in The Marriage. Liz Marriott offers some sage advice to her daughter's young friend, only to have her interest boomerang with a hilarious twist on tomorrow's amusing family drama. And you'll want to join top NBC newsman Henry Cassidy as he guides the listener through America's Southlands on the brand new radio series Heritage Over the Land, a fascinating report on the rebirth of the South. Remember to stay with NBC throughout the day for our Sunday parade of great entertainment.
And now we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
My darling Sybil, it is so good to see you, lovelier than ever. Sybil, I...
Yes, Arthur, dear?
Sybil, I have something of the utmost importance to say to you.
Yes? Why, Arthur, is anything wrong?
Oh.
You look quite distressed.
Sybil, do you trust me?
Darling, whatever is the matter? You know I trust you.
I have some very upsetting news. I'm afraid we will have to postpone the wedding.
Oh, Arthur.
Well, there now, dear. It'll only be for a short while.
But, Arthur, don't you love me anymore?
Oh, you are my whole life. I love you more than anything in the world. Please believe me, Sybil.
Oh, I'll try, but I don't understand.
But, darling, I have suddenly been placed in a position of terrible difficulty from which neither honor nor duty will allow me to escape. You must believe me that it is essential to our happiness that we postpone the wedding.
I know you're always right, Arthur,
but
it makes me terribly unhappy.
And I am the most miserable man in the world, but we must be patient. I promise you it won't be for long.
But I'll go on seeing you every day.
I'm afraid not. I must leave for abroad right away.
Oh, Arthur, will you be gone long?
Not more than a month, I'm sure. Perhaps much less. You must have faith in me.
Very well, but it's simply terrible.
Ah, my love.
Write to me every day.
Indeed I will. I shall miss you every moment. Now dry your eyes and tell me that you love me.
Oh, I do, Arthur, I do.
Then everything will be all right. I will never be able to tell you how much your faith and trust means to me. Oh, how I wish I could tell you something. stayed with Sybil till nearly midnight, comforting her and being comforted in return. Early next morning, I left for the continent, after writing a firm letter to Sybil's father about the necessary postponement of our marriage. Every day, for 3 long weeks, I studied the obituary column of the London Times, expecting to see a notice of Lady Clementina's death. I began to worry all over again, and regretted that I'd prevented her taking the aconitine when she had been so anxious to try its effect. But all was well. In the 4th week, I received a cable that Lady Clem had died suddenly on the night of the 17th. I sent Sybil a telegram announcing my immediate return to London. When I arrived, I found the old lady had left everything to Sybil and myself. And it was at Lady Clem's flat that I made a horrible discovery. Sybil and I were going through the effects.
Oh, Arthur, look! How sweet!
What is it, darling? What have you found?
It's a lovely little box. Isn't it quaint? Do let me have it.
Oh, of course, my dear. I gave it to the poor old lady.
Oh, thank you. And may I have the bonbon, too?
Huh?
I had no notion that she liked sweets.
I thought
she was far too intellectual.
The bonbon, did you say?
Yes.
Bonbon, Sybil? What do you mean?
There's one in it, that's all. Oh. It looks quite old and dusty. I've not the slightest idea of eating it. Why? What's the matter, Arthur? How white you look.
Yeah, let me see. Oh. It was the poisoned capsule I had given to Lady Clem. It could only mean that she had died a natural death after all, and I must begin all over again. Poison having proved a complete failure, dynamite or some other explosive was obviously the proper thing to try. Again, I went over the list of my relatives and finally determined to blow up my uncle, the Dean of Chichester. The Dean was extremely fond of collecting clocks. This hobby seemed to afford me an excellent opportunity for carrying out my scheme. My Oxford days once more stood me in good stead. I remembered one Herr Winkelkopf, whose services we utilized then for a Guy Fawkes celebration. I called on him at his address in Soho. Herr Winkelkopf?
Yes?
My name is Smith, Mr. Robert Smith. I am most anxious to have a short interview with you on a matter of business. I want you to supply me with an explosive clock.
I'm charmed to meet you again, Lord Arthur. Don't look so alarmed.
Oh.
I remember you from a certain Guy Fawkes day. Do you mind sitting with me while I finish my breakfast? There is an excellent party, and my friends are kind enough to say that my Rhine wine is better than anything they get at the German embassy. Help yourself.
Thank you.
Explosive clocks are not very good things for foreign exportation. Even if they succeed in passing the custom house, the train service is so irregular that they usually go off before they have reached their proper destination. If, however, you want one for home use, I can supply you with an excellent article and guarantee that you will be satisfied with the result. May I ask for whom it is intended? If it is for the police or for anyone connected with Scotland Yard, I'm afraid I can do nothing for you. The English detectives really are our best friends. I've always found that by relying on their stupidity, we can do exactly what we like. I could not spare one of them.
I assure you that it has nothing to do with the police. In fact, the clock is intended for the Dean of Chichester.
Dear me, I had no idea you felt so strongly about religion, Lord Arthur. Few young men do nowadays.
I'm afraid you overrate me, Herr Winkelkopf. The fact is, I really know nothing about theology.
This is purely a private matter, then?
Purely private.
Oh, I see now. Now, look here over on the mantelpiece. That little French clock there. Would that suit your purpose?
That is just what I want. Tell me, how does it go off?
Ah, there is my secret. Let me know when you wish it to explode, and I will set this machine to the moment.
Well, today is Tuesday. Could you send it off at once?
No, that is impossible. I have a great deal of important work on hand for some friends of mine in Moscow.
Oh.
Still, I might send it off tomorrow.
Oh, that will be quite time enough if it is delivered tomorrow night or Thursday morning. For the time of the explosion, say Friday at noon exactly. The Dean is always at home at that hour.
Friday at noon. I'll make a note of it.
Good. And now, pray, let me know how much I am in your debt.
It's such a small matter that I don't care to make any charge. The dynamite comes to 7 and 6 pence. The clock will be 3 pounds 10. The carriage about 5 shillings.
But your trouble, Herr Winkelkopf.
Oh, that's nothing. It's a pleasure for me. I don't work for money. I live entirely for my art.
not long to wait for news after my interview with Herr Winkelkopf. 2 days later, as I was going upstairs to bed, my mother called me into her boudoir.
You must hear Jane's last letter. It's quite as good as a novel.
Jane?
Yes, your cousin Jane at the deanery in Chichester.
What did she say? Here, let me see.
Sit down, dear, and I'll read it to you. My dearest aunt, thank you so much for the flannel for the Dorcas Society and also for the gingham. We had great fun this week over a clock that an unknown admirer sent Papa last Thursday. It arrived in a wooden box from London, carriage paid, and Papa feels it must have been sent by someone who'd read his sermons. Parker unpacked it and Papa put it on the mantelpiece in the library. And we were all sitting there on Friday morning when just as the clock struck 12, we heard a whirring noise.
Yes, yes, yes.
And a little puff of smoke came from the pedestal of the figure on top, and it fell off. Oh. Maria was quite alarmed, but James and I went off into fits of laughter, and even Papa was amused.
Amused?
When we examined it, we found it was a sort of alarm clock, and that if you set it to a particular hour and put some gunpowder and a cap under a little hammer, it went off whenever you wanted.
Oh.
Regis carried it off to the schoolroom and does nothing but have small explosions all day long.
Oh.
I think Arthur would like one for a wedding present.
Heaven forbid.
What did you say, dear?
Nothing, Mother.
Oh, now let me see. Where was I? Oh, yes. Yes, do you think Arthur would like one for a wedding present? Oh, dear. Reggie has just had another explosion and Papa has ordered the clock to be sent to the stables.
Mm.
I don't think he likes it as much as he did at first, though he is very flattered at being sent such a pretty and ingenious toy.
Mm.
Papa sent his love, in which James and Reggie and Maria all unite, and hoping that Uncle Cecil's gout is better, believe me, dear aunt, ever your affectionate niece, Jane Percy. Now, isn't that a nice letter?
Oh, yes, I suppose so.
Why, Arthur, you do look so unhappy. I shall never read your young lady's letter again. But, dear, what shall I say about the clock? I think it's a capital invention, and really I should like to have one myself.
Oh, I don't think much of them. Good night, Mother.
Really, Arthur, I simply don't know what's come over you lately. You seem to have entirely lost your sense of humor. You know, I think that...
And so I had failed again. I left the house and wandered down to the Thames embankment. I walked for hours by the river, contemplating this new blow fate had dealt me, and deciding what I was to do now. I've tried to do my duty. Everything's against me. Perhaps it would be better to break off the marriage altogether. I know Sybil would suffer, but she's young and she would recover. As for me, what does it matter? I've done my best to commit the deed written in my hand, but I've been thwarted. One might almost say betrayed. Well, I refuse to try anymore. Let fate work out my doom. I shall not stir to help her. How unreal everything looks. The moon on the river.
Good evening, sir.
What? Why, Podgers.
Or should I say perhaps good morning? You'll pardon my speaking to you, sir, but I have been watching you. You appear troubled.
Yes, I am. Podgers.
Well, then. Perhaps I could be of some assistance.
Perhaps.
Allow me to present myself. Mr. Septimus R. Podgers. I'm a palmist. You may perhaps have heard of me.
Yes, I have.
Ah, good. In my small way, I believe I've been able to help many people in my time. Do allow me to help you.
I will.
Here's my card with my office hours.
Why not now?
Not? Really? Lovely.
No.
Perhaps I'd better...
Oh, no, certainly not.
My office.
Don't hurt me. No. By all means. No.
What's this now? Yesterday at 7 o'clock, the body of Mr. Septimus R. Podgers, the eminent palmist, was washed on shore at Greenwich, just in front of the Ship Hotel. It is supposed that he committed suicide under the influence of a temporary derangement caused by overwork, and a verdict to that effect was returned this afternoon by the coroner's jury.
My dear Sybil, let us be married tomorrow.
Oh, you foolish boy. Oh. Why, the cake is not even ordered.
Sybil and I were married at St. Peter's by my uncle, the Dean of Chichester. Never did I regret for a single moment all I had suffered for her sake. We took up residence at Alton Priory, a lovely old place that was the wedding present to us from my father, the Duke. One day, Lady Windermere came to call.
It's so nice to see you, Lady Windermere. Arthur is down in the garden, but he will be along very shortly.
Tell me, Sybil, are you happy?
Dear Lady Windermere, of course I'm happy. Aren't you?
Oh, I've no time to be happy, Sybil. I always like the last person who is introduced to me. But as a rule, as soon as I know people, I get tired of them.
Don't your social lions satisfy you, Lady Windermere?
Oh, dear, no. Lions are only good for one season. As soon as their manes are out, they are the dullest creatures going. Besides, they behave very badly if you are really nice to them. Do you remember that horrid Mr. Podgers?
Yes.
He was a dreadful imposter. Of course, I didn't mind at all, and even when he wanted to borrow money, I forgave him. But I could not stand his making love to me. He has really made me hate palmistry. I go in for telepathy now. Oh, it's much more amusing.
You mustn't say anything against palmistry here, Lady Windermere.
Oh?
It is the only subject that Arthur does not like people to chaff about. I assure you, he is quite serious over it.
You don't mean to say that he believes in it, Sybil?
Ask him, Lady Windermere. Here he comes up the path.
Hello, Lady Windermere.
Hello.
Some roses for you, my dove.
Oh, you extravagant boy. Lord Arthur.
Yes?
You don't mean to say that you believe in palmistry, Arthur?
Of course I do.
But why?
Because I owe to it all the happiness of my life.
My dear Lord Arthur, what do you owe to it?
Sybil.
What nonsense. Never heard such nonsense in all my life.
Sir Laurence Olivier will speak to you in just a moment. Tomorrow on NBC, you want to turn another page in the latest edition of Weekend, NBC's Sunday newspaper of the air. A host of personalities are on hand to keep you posted on everything from world news to the latest word on home, sports, and people. Such notables as Tex and Jinx McCrary, Earl Wilson, and Mel Allen bring you feature items of interest to all. And top-flight NBC newsmen offer accurate commentary on local and international highlights of the week. That's Weekend, tomorrow on NBC.
This is Laurence Olivier again. First, I should like to thank our cast in this adaptation of Oscar Wilde's story, Lord Arthur Saville's Crime. Our players this week were Gabrielle Blunt, Daphne Maddox, Paul Whitsome Jones, Keith Pyatt, Miriam Spencer, and Joan Young. I shall next week again have the pleasure of introducing another play to you. Until then, au revoir, and thank you.
Sir Laurence Olivier starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. Theatre Royal is an NBC presentation, produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
It's the Big Preview with Fred Robbins next on the NBC Radio Network.